It could be evidence.
The easiest way to get it would be to suit up and go EVA. But with no one else in the ship, Fuchs decided against that. Instead, he maneuvered star power into an orbit that matched the asteroid's own spin, the tip of his tongue apprehensively between his teeth, then slowly, carefully, brought the big ship to within a dozen meters of the rocky surface. Using the manipulator arms on Star Power's equipment module, Fuchs snatched the laser up off the asteroid and tucked it inside the cargo bay. He was soaked with perspiration by the time the job was done, but feeling proud of his piloting. Mopping his forehead, Fuchs resisted the temptation to call Ceres and ask if they had any fresh data on George's ship.
No, he scolded himself. You must remain silent.
Maybe that's what George is doing, he thought.
Gone silent, so no one can find him. Obviously he left in a big hurry. Most likely he was attacked, perhaps killed. But if he got away, now he's staying silent to keep his attacker from finding him again. But what do I do now?
Fuchs wondered.
He left the bridge and went to the galley.
The brain needs nourishment, he said to himself. I can't think well on an empty stomach.
He realized that his coverall shirt was sticky with perspiration.
Honest work, he told himself. But it doesn't smell good.
By the time he washed up and ate a prepackaged meal, he still had no clear idea of what he should do next.
Find George,
he thought.
Yes, but how?
Back to the bridge he went, and called up the search and rescue program from the computer files.
Aha, he said aloud. Expanding spiral.
Standard operational procedure for a search mission was to fly an expanding spiral out from the last known position of the lost spacecraft. The one thing that worried Fuchs, though, was that George might have gone batting off at a high angle off the ecliptic. While the major planets orbited within a few degrees of the ecliptic path, plenty of asteroids roamed 20 or 30 degrees above or below that plane. Suppose George had gone angling away at high thrust. Fuchs knew he'd never find him then. As it was, the belt was so huge that even if George stuck close to the ecliptic plane, he could be halfway to hell by now. A few days at high thrust could push a ship all the way back to Earth or out past Jupiter. Still, there was nothing more that Fuchs could do but fly his expanding spiral and sweep with his radar at high angles above and below his position while he moved away from the asteroid. He set the course, then got into his spacesuit to slither down the long buckyball cable that connected Star Power's habitation unit with the equipment module. The hollow cable was big enough for a person to squeeze through, but it was not pressurized. You had to wear a suit, and that made crawling along the kilometer-long cable a long, arduous chore. Still, Fuchs had nothing else to do, and he wanted to see the laser that George had left behind.
Doric Harbin was searching, too. He had picked up Star Power's telemetry signals within hours of Fuchs's leaving Ceres and tracked the departing ship from a safe distance. Before the day was out, however, the telemetry signal had abruptly cut off. Harbin debated moving close enough to the ship to sight it visually, but before he could make up his mind to do that, the telemetry came back on and showed that Star Power was moving again, cutting diagonally across the belt at high thrust. Where could he be going? Harbin asked himself. He must have a specific destination in mind, going at that velocity. He matched Star Power's course and speed, staying far enough behind the departing spacecraft so that he wouldn't be spotted. Even if Fuchs was cautious enough to probe behind him with radar, the beam would be so scattered by his own engine's exhaust that he'd never see me, Harbin knew. He stayed within the shadow of Fuchs's exhaust cloud and trailed Star Power. He thought. Actually, he was following Fuchs's escape pod. Again, he thought of Grigor's comment. Destroy Star Power, and all this hunting and killing might be finished. I'll get my money, and a considerable bonus, Harbin thought. I can go back to Earth, and find a safe area and live like an emir for the rest of my life. Where would the best place be on Earth? I want a warm climate, safe from the rising sea levels. No earthquakes, stable government. A wealthy country, not one where half the population is starving and the other half plotting revolution. Canada, perhaps. Or Australia. They have very tight restrictions of immigration, but with enough money a man can go wherever he wants. Maybe Spain, he thought. Barcelona is still livable, and Madrid hasn't had a food riot in years.
Hiring reliable people was Amanda's biggest headache. She worried about her husband sailing all alone out into the belt, trying like so many others to strike it rich. Or was he? Her greatest fear was that Lars was out seeking revenge on Humphreys by attacking HSS ships. Even if he didn't get killed, he'd become an outlaw, a pariah. She tried to force such thoughts out of her mind as she worked at restarting their supply business on the insurance money from the fire. Labor was at a premium on Ceres. Most of the people who came out to the belt went prospecting, intent on finding a rich asteroid and becoming wealthy from its ores. Even the experienced hands who had learned from bitter experience that most prospectors barely broke even, while the big corporations raked in the profits from selling ores, still went out time and again, always seeking the big one that would make their fortunes. Or they worked as miners, taking the ores from asteroids either as corporate employees or under contract to one of the big corporations. Miners didn't get rich, but they didn't starve either. Amanda had taken courses in economics at college. She understood that the more asteroids were mined, the more plentiful their metals and minerals, the lower their value. A corporation like Astro or HSS could afford to work on a slim profit margin because they handled such an enormous volume of ores. A lone prospector had to sell at market prices, and the price was always far below their starry-eyed dreams. She frowned as she dressed for another day of work. Then why is Lars out there prospecting? He knows the odds as well as anyone does. And why hasn't he sent any messages to me? He warned me that he wouldn't, but I thought that after a few days he'd at least tell me he's all right. The answer was clear to her, but she didn't want to believe it. He's not prospecting. He's out there on some insane kind of mission to get even with Martin. He wants to fight back, one man against the most powerful corporation in the solar system. He'll get himself killed, and there's nothing I can do about it. That was what hurt her the most, that feeling of utter impotence, the knowledge that there was no way she could protect or even help the man she loved. He's gone away from me, she realized, not merely physically. Lars has moved away from me, away from our marriage, away from our relationship. He's let his anger override our love. He's after vengeance now, no matter what it costs. Fighting back the tears in her eyes, she booted up her computer and took up where she'd left off the previous night, searching for people willing to work in the warehouse. In her desperation, she had even sent a call to Pancho, back Earthside. Now, as the wall screen sprang to life, she saw that Pancho had returned her message. "Show Pancho Lane's message," she commanded the computer. Pancho's angular, mocha-skinned face grinned at her. She appeared to be in an office somewhere in the tropics, probably Astro's corporate headquarters in Venezuela. "Got your sad story, Mandy. I can appreciate how tough it is to get reliable people to work in your warehouse. I wish I could ship you a couple of my folks. But nobody with a decent job here is going to go peacefully out to Ceres unless they got asteroid fever and think they're going to become zillionaires in 6 weeks." Hunching close to the camera, Pancho went on. "Let me warn you about one thing, though. Some of the people who might agree to work for you could be HSS plants. Screen everybody real careful, kid. There's skunks in the woodworks, I bet." Amanda shook her head wearily. "As if I didn't have enough to worry about," she thought. Pancho leaned back again and said, "I'm off to Lawrence, Kansas. Got a meeting with the International Consortium of Universities to work out a deal to build a research station in Jupiter orbit. Might be some college kids looking for jobs. Lord knows there's enough unemployment around. I'll see what I can find for you. In the meantime, watch your butt. That old humper still wants to take over Astro, and you and Lars are standing in his way." With a cheerful wave, Pancho signed off. Amanda felt like crawling back into bed and staying there until Lars returned. If he returned at all.
"How long should I search?" Fuchs asked himself. "It's been 3 days now, and no sign of George. No sign of anything." He had known, intellectually, that the belt was almost entirely empty space. Even in his freshman astronomy course, he remembered it being compared to a big, empty theater that contained only a few specks of dust floating in its vast volume. Now he felt the reality of it. Staring out the windows in the bridge of star power, studying the screens that displayed the